Hello, and welcome to Learning English, the daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America in Washington. This program is designed to help people like you learn everyday American English. Every Saturday on this program, we tell you an American story. This week, we present Mammon and the Archer. It has been called an amusing and charming tale about money and love, and which is more powerful. But first, on this Easter weekend, we will report on the rise of religious hatred. Then we will tell you about a letter from U.S. President Donald Trump to the President of Vietnam that reportedly said Trump hopes for cooperation on economics, trade, and regional and international issues. And we will tell you about a computer and its artificial intelligence that won hundreds of thousands of dollars from human poker players. So, let's get started.
Christians in Egypt are asking the government for better security after two recent bombings killed dozens at two churches. Islamic State militants claimed responsibility for the bombings, which killed 45 people on Palm Sunday. Palm Sunday is a holy day for Christians to celebrate Christ's arrival at the city of Jerusalem a week before Easter. Egypt's president, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, ordered a three-month state of emergency in response to the bombings. It gives his government sweeping powers to deal with what he calls enemies of the state. On Wednesday, Egyptian officials named Mahmoud Hassan Mubarak Abdullah as the suspected suicide bomber in the attack. The government said he had connections to people who carried out earlier terrorist attacks in Egypt. Bishop Macarius is head of the Coptic Christian Church in the Egyptian city of Minya. Macarius said the state of emergency will not provide enough protection. Security solutions never succeeded alone, he said. No state in the world should be a police state, either here or elsewhere. Emergency all the time makes people nervous. Coptic Christians make up about 10% of the 92 million people in mostly Muslim Egypt. It is the largest Christian minority in the Middle East.
A new report by the Pew Research Center says that hostility toward people based on their religious beliefs is increasing. Pew said that the percentage of countries with high levels of religious hostility increased from 23% in 2014 to 27% in 2015. It is based on the latest information collected by Pew. So have government restrictions on religion. Pew said the percentage of countries with very high levels of restrictions on religion increased from 24% in 2014 to 25% in 2015. Pew said that Russia, Egypt, Pakistan, and Nigeria had the highest level of religious restrictions. Pew noted that the U.S. State Department reported in 2015 that the Egyptian government failed to protect Christians targeted by kidnappings and extortion. That was well before the Palm Sunday bombings, Pew said.
But Christians are not the only religious people under attack. Pew said that Boko Haram militants in Nigeria reportedly killed thousands of people. Some resulted from indiscriminate acts of violence, but other attacks targeted Christians and Muslims seen as opposed to Boko Haram. In Europe, 33 of 45 countries reported hostile acts against Jews in 2015, Pew said. Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York addressed Coptic Christians attending services recently at St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City. If you see the hope and the resilience of the Coptic people that are here with us now in New York, after all they've been through, their faith won't let them down, Dolan said. The Anti-Defamation League, or ADL, said it stands with Christians in Egypt and Christians worldwide. The fact that the terrorist attacks took place during Palm Sunday and targeted Coptic Christians as they were conducting their service inside the churches testified to the inhuman barbarity of the terrorists, said the ADL, a Jewish human rights group. Makarios said Sunday's celebration of Easter will include the usual prayers, but because of the recent bombings, it will not include Easter's usual celebrations and visits from famous people. But the first scheduled visit to Egypt by Pope Francis, the head of the Catholic Church, is still scheduled for April 28th to the 29th. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Bruce Alpert. A government-run Vietnamese website says U.S. President Donald Trump sent a letter to President Chun Dai Quang wishing to promote cooperation on economics, trade, regional, and international issues. The Vietnamese president mentioned Trump's letter during a meeting with Ted Osius, the U.S. ambassador to Vietnam. But there has been no U.S. comment on the matter. Experts on U.S.-Vietnam relations say Vietnam officials were worried that under Trump, the U.S. would reduce support for the Southeast Asian nation. The letter eased Vietnam's concerns, but they do not expect any immediate action. Vietnam was expected to be one of the countries to benefit from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. But Trump pulled the U.S. out of the trade agreement after he took office in January. Last year, Vietnam's exports to the U.S. were worth over $38 billion, but it only received $8.7 billion of imports. It would take many years if Trump wants to negotiate a deal that would balance trade between the U.S. and Vietnam. Adam McCarty is an economist in Hanoi. He said in spite of the letter, Trump might view Vietnam as a country that takes jobs away from the United States. That may affect how his administration deals with Vietnam. Some experts on Southeast Asia say the relationship between the U.S. and Vietnam could become about more than jobs and trade. That would happen if the U.S. asks for Vietnam's help in dealing with China. Carl Thayer is a retired professor at the University of New South Wales in Australia. He said, even if Vietnam pursues a good relationship with the U.S., the efforts could come undone if Trump mostly deals with China instead of countries in Southeast Asia. The U.S., under both Barack Obama and Donald Trump,
has expressed interest in limiting China's expansion in the South China Sea. It is not clear whether Vietnam is part of the U.S. plan. Kevin Snowball is the chief executive of PXP Vietnam Asset Management in Ho Chi Minh City. He said Vietnam will not want to offend China, its largest trading partner, by making deals with the U.S. At the moment, worry about the U.S., Trump, or China does not seem to be affecting Vietnam's trade. We're still doing extremely well with or without TPP, with or without Trump, Snowball said. I'm Dan Friedel.
An artificial intelligence, or AI program, has again beaten a group of human poker players to win $792,000 in virtual money. The AI program won during a recent competition against experienced poker players in China. More than 36,000 hands were played during a 5-day competition on China's Hainan Island. The computer went up against a group of 6 human players led by Alan Du, a winner in the 2016 World Series of Poker tournament. The human team said it attempted to play against the AI system like a machine rather than using traditional methods of humans. The winning system is called Lengpudashi, or Cold Poker Master. It was developed by engineers at America's Carnegie Mellon University. A previous version of the AI system beat 4 top poker players in the world in a U.S. competition last January. Artificial intelligence is the capability of a computer to learn to perform human-like operations and make decisions. This can be achieved by putting large amounts of data into a computer for processing. Algorithms are also used to help computers learn through experiences the same way humans do. This kind of AI technology is used in machine translation systems like Google Translate. Last year, Google's AI system AlphaGo beat a Korean champion in the ancient Chinese board game Go. The 2 wins show how AI development has greatly increased in the ability to succeed against humans. But poker differs from Go in that a player keeps his cards hidden from the opponent. Poker players also use techniques to trick opponents into thinking they have a better hand than they actually do. This is one area where a computer can find it hard to match human thinking and actions. But a co-creator of the Lengpudashi program, Noam Brown, said the computer even performed well in this part of the competition. People think that bluffing is very human. It turns out that's not true, said Brown, a computer scientist and student. A computer can learn from experience that if it has a weak hand and it bluffs, it can make more money, Brown told Bloomberg. Brown and Carnegie Mellon professor Thomas Sandholm won $290,000 in the competition. The money will go to Strategic Machine Inc., a company started by the two to develop AI. The company is involved in many other areas besides games. These include AI solutions that can be applied to business, negotiation, cybersecurity, political campaigns, and medical treatment. I'm Brian Lynn.
Now, we present an American story. Mammon and the Archer was written by William Sidney Porter, best known as O. Henry. The story was first published in the New York World newspaper and later published by O. Henry in 1906 in a collection of his stories. Critics say Mammon and the Archer is one of O. Henry's best stories. It tells about Anthony Rockwall, a man of great wealth who believes that money can buy everything and tries to prove it.
Old Anthony Rockwall, who made millions of dollars by making and selling Rockwall soap, stood at the window of his large Fifth Avenue house. He was looking out at his neighbor, G. Van Schulite Suffolk Jones. His neighbor is a proud member of a proud old New York family. He came out of his door and got into a cab. He looked once, quickly as usual, at Anthony Rockwall's house. The look showed that Suffolk Jones was a very important man, while a rich soap maker was nothing.
"I'll have this house painted red, white, and blue next summer," said the Soap King to himself. "And we'll see how he likes that."
And then Anthony Rockwall turned around and shouted,
"Mike!"
in a loud voice. He never used a bell to call a servant.
"Tell my son," he said when the servant came, "to come to me before he leaves the house."
When young Rockwall entered the room, the old man put down the newspaper he had been reading.
"Richard," said Anthony Rockwall, "what do you pay for the soap that you use?"
Richard had finished college 6 months before, and he had come home to live. He had not yet learned to understand his father. He was always being surprised. He said,
$6 for 12 pieces.
"And your clothes?"
"About $60, usually."
"You are a gentleman," said his father. "I have heard of young men who pay $24 for 12 pieces of soap, and more than 100 for clothes. You have as much money to throw away as anyone else has. But what you do is reasonable. I myself use Rockwall soap because it is the best. When you pay more than 10 cents for a piece of soap, you're paying for a sweet, strong smell and a name. But 50 cents is good for a young man like you. You are a gentleman. People say that if a man is not a gentleman, his son can't be a gentleman. But perhaps his son's son will be a gentleman. But they're wrong. Money does it faster than that. Money has made you a gentleman. It has almost made me a gentleman. I've become very much like the two gentlemen who own the houses on each side of us. My manners are now almost as bad as theirs. But they still can't sleep at night because a soap maker lives in this house."
"There are some things that money can't do," said the young man, rather sadly.
"Don't say that," said old Anthony. "Money is successful every time. I don't know anything you can't buy with it. Tell me something that money can't buy. And I want you to tell me something more. Something is wrong with you. I've seen it for 2 weeks. Tell me. Let me help you. In 24 hours, I could have $11 million here in my hands. Are you sick?"
"Some people call it a sickness."
"Oh," said Anthony. What's her name? Why don't you ask her to marry you? She would be glad to do it. You have money, you're good-looking, and you are a good boy. Your hands are clean. You have no Rockwall soap on them.
I haven't had a chance to ask her, said Richard.
Make a chance, said Anthony. Take her for a walk in the park, or walk home with her from church.
You don't know the life of a rich girl, Father. Every hour and minute of her time is planned. I must have her, or the world is worth nothing to me. And I can't write to say I love her. I can't do that.
Do you tell me, said the old man, that with all my money you can't get an hour or two of a girl's time?
I've waited too long. She's going to Europe the day after tomorrow. She's going to be there 2 years. I'm allowed to see her alone tomorrow evening for a few minutes. She's coming to the city on a train. I'm going to meet her with a cab. Then we'll drive fast to the theater where she must meet her mother and some other people. Do you think she would listen to me then? No. Or in the theater? No. Or after the theater? No. No, Father, this is one trouble that your money can't help. We can't buy 1 minute of time with money. If we could, rich people would live longer. There is no hope of talking with Miss Lantry before she sails.
Richard, my boy, said old Anthony, I'm glad you're not really sick. You say money won't buy time? Perhaps it won't buy all of time, but I've seen it buy some little pieces.
That evening, his sister, Ellen, came to Anthony to talk about the troubles that lovers have.
He told me all about it, said Brother Anthony. I told him he could have all the money he wanted. Then he began to say that money was no use to him. He said money couldn't help him.
Oh, Anthony, said Ellen, I wish you wouldn't think so much of money. Money is no help for love. Love is all-powerful. If he had only spoken to her earlier, she could never say no to our Richard. But now I fear it is too late. All your gold cannot buy happiness for your son.
At 8 the next evening, Ellen took an old gold ring and gave it to Richard.
Wear it tonight, she said. Your mother gave it to me. She asked me to give it to you when you had found the girl you loved.
Young Rockwall took the ring and tried to put it on his little finger. It was too small. He put it inside his coat in a place where he thought it would be safe. And then he called for his cab. At the station, he met Miss Lantry.
We must not keep my mother and the others waiting, said she.
To Wallach's Theater, as fast as you can drive, said Richard to the cabbie.
They rolled along 42nd Street to Broadway, and from there to 34th Street. Then young Richard quickly ordered the cabbie to stop.
I've dropped the ring, he said, getting out. It was my mother's, and I don't want to lose it. This will only take a minute. I saw where it fell.
In less than a minute, he was again in the cab with the ring. But within that minute, a wagon had stopped in front of the cab. The cabbie tried to pass it on the left, but a cab was there. He tried to pass on the right, but another cab was there. He could not go back. He was caught where he was and could not move in any direction. These sudden stops of movement will happen in the city. Instead of moving along the street in their usual orderly way, all the wagons and cabs will suddenly be mixed together and stopped.
Why don't you drive further?
Said Miss Lantry.
We'll be late.
Richard stood up in the cab and looked around. He saw a stream of cabs and wagons and everything else on wheels rolling toward the corner where Broadway, 6th Avenue, and 34th Street meet. They came from all directions, and more were rolling toward them. More and more were caught there. Drivers and cabbies shouted. Everyone on wheels in New York City seemed to be hurrying to this place.
I'm very sorry, said Richard. He sat down again. We can't move. They won't get this straight for an hour. If I hadn't dropped the ring, we...
Let me see the ring, said Miss Lantry. Since we really can't hurry, I don't care. I didn't want to go to the theatre. I don't like the theatre.
At 11 that night, someone stopped at the door of Anthony's room.
Come in, shouted Anthony.
He had been reading and put down his book. It was Ellen.
They are going to be married, Anthony, she said. She has promised to marry our Richard. On their way to the theatre, their cab was stopped in the street. It was 2 hours before they could move again. Oh, Brother Anthony, don't ever talk about the power of money again. It was a little ring, a true love ring, that was the cause of our Richard finding his happiness. He dropped it on the street and had to get out and find it. And before they could continue, the cab was caught among the others. He told her of his love there in the cab. Money is nothing, Anthony. True love is everything.
I'm glad the boy got what he wanted, said old Anthony. I told him I didn't care how much money.
But, Brother Anthony, what could your money do?
Sister, said Anthony Rockwell, I'm reading a book with a good story in it. It's a wild adventure story, but I like it. And I want to find what happens next. I wish you would let me go on reading.
The story should end there. I wish it would. I'm sure you too wish it would end there. But we must go on to the truth. The next day, a person with red hands and a blue necktie, whose name was Kelly, came to Anthony Rockwell's house to see Anthony.
That was good soap we made, said Anthony. I gave you $5,000 yesterday.
I paid out $300 more of my own money, said Kelly. It cost more than I expected. I got the cabs, most of them, for $5, but anything with two horses was $10. I had to pay most to the cops. $50 I paid to two, and the others $20 and $25. But didn't it work beautifully, Mr. Rockwall? They were all on time, and it was 2 hours before anyone could move.
$1,300. There you are, Kelly, said Anthony, giving him the money. $1,000 for you. And the $300 of your own money that you had to spend. You like money, do you, Kelly?
I do, said Kelly.
Anthony stopped Kelly when he was at the door.
Did you see, asked he, anywhere on the street yesterday, a little fat boy with no clothes on, carrying arrows?
Kelly looked surprised.
No, I didn't. But if he was like that with no clothes, perhaps the cops caught him.
I thought Cupid wouldn't be there, Anthony said, laughing. Goodbye, Kelly.
You can find more American stories at learningenglish.voanews.com. Also at our website, you will find a quiz about Mammon and the Archer and other activities that will help you use the story to learn American English. Was this program helpful? We'd like to know your thoughts. Send us a message through our website or send us an email. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. We read every message you send. You can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel, all at VOA Learning English. Be sure to listen to VOA World News at the beginning of every hour, Universal Time, every day of the year. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you, and has helped you learn everyday American English. For all of us here at VOA Learning English in Washington, thanks for spending some time with us today. I hope you'll join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from The Voice of America.